show. Enjoy the show. Enjoy the show. Enjoy the show. Enjoy the show. Lights, camera, action.
All right, episode 9, the one where Brandon is not here.
Oh, bummer. We're one amigo down.
One amigo down. Two amigos today. Also, recording on a Friday, it's a little bit different for us.
Yeah, Friday night.
Yesterday, yeah, Brandon ran into some car trouble. I hate car trouble.
Man, our best wishes to that, dude. That's never fun. Luckily, his dad's a car mechanic, so hopefully they can get it fixed.
Exactly. And then you started a new job, too.
I did.
Vitamin shop.
Vitamin shop. Got to pay for a wedding, you know, so try to get a second job. It's going all right. It's funny. It's a good way to supplement my time.
Literally.
Exactly. You know, in a supplement shop, similar work to what I'm doing as a personal trainer. But, you know, I love my time I spend here. You know, if we could do this for a living, I'd be happy.
Yeah, exactly. If I could just do this all the time. Work exactly. For me was super busy, too. I was talking to my dad earlier, and it basically feels like my days are super long, but my weeks are really short.
Yeah.
Like each day seems like it goes on forever, but I'm stuck in the same day. So I look forward to these days for sure. But
yeah, it's nice to have something fun to do.
Yeah, like you said, you got to pay for those flowers. That was crazy. That price, that was ridiculous.
It's so funny because I've talked to everybody about this, and I'm like, Ryan, that's not that bad. Ryan's not that bad. And it's like, you don't understand. It's a principle.
Yeah.
You're setting money on fire. Flowers die.
Yeah, you're just going to throw them away.
Yeah. You're always going to end up in a trash somewhere, and that really bums me out.
They're pretty for a little bit, though.
Yeah. If it makes Shaylee happy, it makes Shaylee happy.
Got to do that. Did you do anything else fun this week?
No, man. Just been working. It's hopefully – might do some golfing this weekend, thinking about it.
Oh, yeah, tomorrow night, you said?
Yeah, talking about it, you know.
Yeah.
Possibility.
I'll see what's going on.
Never done night golfing before, so I was like, eh. Not doing anything. Maybe give it a shot.
Yeah.
Not cool. A huge fan of Mission Bay compared to some of the other courses, but they're the only one I know that does night golf. So.
Yeah. No, I think I'll be down. I got to definitely work those clubs a little bit more, though.
Yeah.
They're just a little too short for me still. Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Takes practice.
But, yeah, last week we talked about the NFL hit rule, and ironically, that same day there was – you know, a bad call in the preseason, the first preseason game.
It was the
Hall of Fame game was the Ravens and the Bears.
Ravens and the Bears, yeah. I mean, you saw it right off the bat. Guy didn't even necessarily – he led with his shoulder, and his helmet hit the player afterwards, and he was charged with a 15-yard penalty for leading with the crown of his head.
Yeah, I saw that play from multiple angles, and I didn't see
– there's not one angle that shows he hit with his head.
I didn't see any penalty at all.
No. The NFL is going to have a huge problem, especially if this is the start of it. You know, we had another big, you know, Thursday. We had a lot of preseason games as well. I didn't see any more, like, terrible calls. It's not just preseason for the players. It's preseason for the referees to try to dial this down. So you can only hope that they get it figured out by the regular season. But I can't foresee this working. Ironically, you look at the college rule, which is player gets, you know, hit. They throw a flag, and they review that flag that they threw to see if the hit was actually illegal. And if the hit was, in fact, illegal, the player is ejected because that's the college rule. And if it turns out that there was no illegal contact, then they pick up the flag, play stands as it was. I don't understand why the NFL can't just get on board with that.
I don't either, and it's not like NCAA's games are taking longer. If anything, it's the same amount of time.
Yeah, and what's the NFL complaining about? More money, like more time. I don't hear one single NFL fan complaining about too much football.
Exactly, and, you know, it's not like the pace of games of football is too long.
Yeah.
It's not like you have a problem similar to what MLB's dealing with, where they're thinking that their games are going too long.
Well, and that's a huge fan interest thing as well. You want to make sure that your fans are being entertained and, you know, the pace of play is staying relative to the sport. You know, if a game's going 4 hours but it's only a nine-inning game, where could we have sped that up? In football, like I said, I've never heard anybody complain about a football game going too long. You know, we only get, you know, 16 official regular season games of you know, 17 weeks of football, but 16 games of your team choice, you know, and then the playoffs. And it goes by quick, so I'm sure fans would be okay with watching an extra 15, 20 minutes of football.
Of course, and I can't speak for every fan of the NFL, but I know for a fact that if I'm watching my team and one of my favorite players, an impact player, has one of these bad calls go against him and he's ejected from the game, that changes, you know, the whole way that the game is going to go. That's going to upset me, so I'd rather that they take that extra little time to make the right call.
Absolutely. I think that it shows very, you know, in baseball, if you see an umpire call a ball that you thought was a strike, you hear all the fans boo, right? And then on the TV, you can kind of see him plot chart it, and it's like, in fact, that actually was a ball. You feel a little better about the situation. You know, you have to leave room for error. Referees are not perfect. They're not supposed to be. They're there to regulate the game as, you know, best as they can. But, I mean, the naked eye sees what it sees. And I think that if – it's not saying that the referees aren't doing their job if they double-check. But, I mean, if you – from your angle, a certain way the play looked, and maybe you did see an illegal hit. But if you go back and check on film and say, hey, this player, in fact, did not hit anybody illegally, I don't think any fans are going to be upset about that at all.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I definitely think the NFL needs to
jump on board with that. Yeah.
And I think it's going to affect their fan base over everything, because it's going to be one of these big games that is going to affect a big play. Yeah. And
I mean, knowing that you're not a huge Charger fan, but me still being a huge Charger fan, you know, their number one pick this year is a safety out of Florida State, Derwin James, who not necessarily a hard-hitting safety, but compared to a Cam Chancellor, somebody that can lay the wood, not necessarily somebody that leads with his helmet, but, you know, what if he goes out there week one, gets thrown out of the game for a questionable illegal hit? You're going to have furious fans everywhere. Maybe not in L.A. because they still don't have a huge fan base, but there are going to be some angry people out there.
I don't know. I think the NFL is going to have to backtrack on that. I get from their side, player safety, it's a huge thing, and you want to keep these players safe. But
yeah.
At the same time, you got to keep people entertained.
Yeah, and I think player safety is huge, but I don't think that changes the fact that if you are just committing an error in double-checking it, you know, what's the harm in that?
Yeah.
Hey, thought that this player hit somebody really hard in the head. You know, or hey, let's take a second look, and if it turns out that he did, cool, then go through with what the original plan was. I just find it ironic that, you know, their college has a huge fan base and they've done everything right.
Oh yeah.
You know, from a profiting standpoint, I mean, you have your big schools out there who bring in a ton of money, you know, huge games on Saturdays, and I don't understand why the NFL can't get on board with that. It's such a simple fix, you know. It's like, hey, college football has been doing this, why don't we do this?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you wholeheartedly on that. Other football news this week, I mean, did you watch any of the Browns Hard Knocks?
No, I haven't seen any of the Hard Knocks yet.
I definitely enjoy watching that series.
Yeah, I love
every
that show.
Year. This year, I mean, maybe it's because, so I listened to the Pat McAfee podcast, and beforehand he went over, you know, his take on it, and maybe that kind of, you know, set me up for viewing it a different way. But Hugh Jackson in that just was the fakest guy I've ever seen. He looked like a terrible head coach to me. It did not surprise me how the Browns didn't win a game last season.
You know, I think I give the Browns organization a lot of credit for handling the unsuccessful team that they've had over the past several years. But I don't understand how a guy that is 1-31 over the last 2 years still has a job.
Yeah.
And like you're saying, the guy never shows enough heart, doesn't back his players, doesn't back his staff, and he's a body. I mean, I feel like they're just trying to piece together a team until they can find a coach that's interested in coming around. But they have a more talented team than they've had in the past.
Yeah. Looking at all these, you know, all these people that they signed, and I was all the acquisition, and I was totally on the, you know, Team Brown. So I was like, man, the Browns are going to come out this year. They're going to put it down. They're going to be a good team.
God, a 7-9 season's a win for that organization.
But after watching this, you know, after watching Hard Knocks, Not at all. They're soft.
Yeah.
They all looked so soft.
And the rough part is they go out there to play the Steelers, Bengals, and Ravens twice a year. I mean, that's practically a simple six losses right there. And because those are teams that are hard-nosed football organizations. And the Browns, you can't be soft in that division.
No, and they were soft. They looked soft. It was like the first week of training camp, and it's like a new thing in the NFL. All these players wear this patch on the on their pads, mm-hmm. and it tracks, you know, how many miles they ran, how many, you know, how much they sweat, all that kind of stuff, their reps. And in the first meeting that they showed, they're like, oh, we're sitting this guy, we're sitting this guy, we're sitting this guy. And I get it. You want player safety. You want these guys to not get injured.
Be healthy early for the season.
You want them to be healthy. You're an 0-16 team. There shouldn't be, we're going to sit this guy because he could be tired now. You got to work these guys.
Yeah.
And absolutely. You got to make sure they give
you
it
You didn't
their
win
all.
A game last year. You should be out there every day working harder than every other team in football because you're the laughingstock of the NFL right now. You've traded away draft picks that could have landed you Deshaun Watson's, Carson Wentz's, Jared Goff's, whatever it may be. You have nothing to show for it. They don't have a single player that was drafted as of the 2016 draft. They just got rid of Corey Coleman, traded him to the Bills, you know, which I understand they're pretty loaded at receiver right now. Your whole thing has been acquiring draft picks, and what do you have to show for it? I mean, you have a fresh new talent. Myles Garrett's in there. You have Denzel Ward, new cornerback out of Ohio State. Baker Mayfield, number one overall draft pick at quarterback, who looked great the other night, by the way.
He did.
And
you got Chubb.
Oh, yeah, Nick Chubb from Georgia. I mean, phenomenal running back. I mean, Carlos Hyde signed from the 49ers.
I think they have Duke Johnson, too.
Do they really? Yeah. I mean, even aside from that, you got Josh Gordon, who's coming back, who, you know, claims he's not inebriated anymore. Jarvis Landry, who's been a stud in this league, you know, ever since day one. There's a lot of talent there. And if you're not pushing these guys, you're not going to win.
No, and it was funny because in the show, they show like a coach's meeting and Todd Haley is offensive coordinator over there now.
Phenomenal offensive coordinator.
And he, you know, is like, listen, we got to push these guys. We got to fight. This is a tough league. We got to play tough. And Hugh Jackson was basically just like, listen, this is my team. I'm going to run it how I want to run it. And that's the way I'm going to do it. And it was kind of like, well, Hugh, you're not running this team very well.
Yeah, you've won one game in the last 2 years.
Yeah, so I don't know. It'll be interesting. Obviously, that was just the first episode, so we'll see how it goes. Also, you know, I felt terrible for Hugh Jackson. He lost his mother and his brother in the same month, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's personal stuff that goes into it as well, so you definitely feel for the guy.
Yeah, and, you know, that's never easy to have to coach while going through that. Yeah. But
and, I mean, a lot of times you see coaches or players take time away from the game, and I mean, he's been there every step of the way. I honestly wish nothing but success for the Browns. I mean, for that fan base,
exactly.
That organization.
That.
Yeah, and nobody wishes this sort of unsuccessful. I mean, it's the whole point that the reason we watch sports, you know, the underdog. And I would love, I mean, gosh, like I said, 7-9 would just be wonderful for the Browns. It's a huge, I mean, gosh, even winning 5 games this year
would be,
I mean, they've got to go out there and show that they can do it. And, you know, that starts from the top there with the coaches. I mean, it's got to be trickling down through that organization. And if it's not there, that kind of behavior gets into those players and they start to think losing's okay.
Yeah, and like we said, it was a preseason. The Browns faced the Giants. Baker Mayfield looked amazing, threw 2 touchdowns. You know, Tyrod Taylor looked incredible, too.
Yeah,
in that
5 for 5 was 80 yards, a touchdown, something like that.
Yeah, yep, something like that. Threw a touchdown. And Barkley for the Giants looked amazing, too.
He's a stud.
Yeah.
I mean, I still think to this day that the Browns shouldn't have passed on him. You know, if Baker Mayfield, you know, ends up having a great career, we're having a different conversation. But I still think that they could have drafted Barkley at 1 and Mayfield at 4 and be sitting with very pretty offense for the next decade.
Mm-hmm. The other game that I thought was interesting, too, was the Bears and the Ravens. Just because, you know, you wanted to see Lamar Jackson out there. You just wanted to see what he could do.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, the Ravens have such a weird dynamic going on with their team.
Yeah. They're kind of in the midst of a possible rebuild, which is good, you know, drafting Lamar Jackson this year if they end up going in that direction. They actually played a game yesterday as well, and Lamar Jackson had a pretty nice scramble for a touchdown. You see the athleticism. You see the arm strength. I know he threw the one bad interception, but that's something that you're going to see in preseason. He looks like a pretty polished quarterback for being a rookie. So I'm excited to see what he can do if he gets an opportunity.
He's just an athletic guy, and he's so explosive.
Yeah.
But I'd like to see him develop a little bit to be more of a passer, because I feel like you see these guys like, RG3's on that team, and he experienced the same kind of, he was a very mobile, explosive quarterback, and he went right to injured reserve.
Yeah.
Throughout his whole career, and so just to see him develop more into a smarter pocket passer, I think would be nice, but... Yeah, then we had the Hall of Fame induction
absolutely
as well this week.
There's a ton of big names out there.
Yeah, bunch of
lots
of
deserving players.
T.O. finally got in, Brian Urlacher, Ray Lewis. Overall, it was a great class.
Yeah,
I
think it's funny for us. I mean, those are people that we grew up, not idolizing, but
just
seeing as the face of the NFL.
For.
And, I mean, those are some phenomenal players. Obviously we had the Terrell Owens not wanting to go to the Hall of Fame induction ceremony, do his own thing. We discussed... off the podcast this week, what we kind of thought about that. I still think he should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. I think you look at if...
Just from statistics.
From statistics, and that's what it's supposed to be looking at. I mean, say what you want about the player off the field, that's fine. Say he was a poor sport or whatever it was, but with nowadays looking at some of the trouble these athletes are getting in now, he wasn't a bad person.
No.
And, to kind of incriminate the player for not liking him. And I think the real slap in the face was the fact that Randy Moss was a first ballot Hall of Famer. Taking nothing away from Randy Moss, he totally deserved it. But, I mean, T.O.'s higher on the list for receiving yards with, I think just one more season than Randy Moss.
But overall, I mean, T.O. was more of an impact player.
Yeah.
And I get it. He was a little bit of a diva in off of the field stuff. And like you said, it shouldn't matter what you do off the field. It's your on the field play.
And I mean, you look at all the receivers from when we were growing up. I mean, Ocho Cinco, Randy Moss, Terrell Owens. I mean, they were all divas. It was a diva position at that point. It was all for the show. My thing with Randy Moss is like he was a go deep player. I mean, the whole term of mossing somebody was invented because of him. I mean,
High pointing the ball.
Bringing it down into the end zone. Terrell Owens was somebody that would run over the middle of the field. He would run over linebackers, safeties. I mean,
he was fearless.
Yeah. Statistically, Terrell Owens, eighth most receiving yards in football history. Randy Moss not even being on that top 10 list. The only area he has him on is receiving touchdowns, which he only had three more, Randy Moss, compared to Terrell Owens. And again, that was Randy Moss's gig. Go up into the end zone, high point the ball, and score a touchdown. I understand Terrell Owens, I wish he would have gone. I mean, from a personal standpoint, you would love to stick it to the people that you think stuck it to you. But I applaud the man for, sticking to his guns and doing it the way he wants to do it, being recognized by the people he wants to be recognized by.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, T.O.'s still in great shape. Yeah. I mean, last season.
He's still talking about playing.
Yeah, last season, there was that video of him running a 4.4. He still had blazing speed. But another guy, Ray Lewis, I know we talked about, I don't know if it is going to be a personal thing. If
then why is he there?
Yeah. That whole thing. He was the city of Baltimore.
Yeah.
So I get that. Baltimore is a huge football city.
Yeah, Super Bowl winning champion twice.
Yeah, and... But his Hall of Fame induction speech was incredible.
Yeah.
It was so inspirational.
Absolutely.
It really was.
And I think that's another big reason why he's a first. I mean, obviously, he was a first ballot Hall of Famer statistically regardless, and he played enough years to do that. He was the energy, the soul of not just that football team, but of his community.
Yeah.
And
he was Baltimore.
Yeah, you think of the Baltimore Ravens, he's the first person that pops into your mind. And, I mean, even when he was going in on his last season and not the best player anymore, I mean, he still went out there fearless every single game. So I applaud the energy more than I applaud the player. I mean, we talked about who our favorite linebackers are, if he's the best linebacker of all time. And I think that's arguable. Even from Brian Urlacher's standpoint, I mean, Brian Urlacher fundamentally one of the top five linebackers of all time, and that's a huge list. I mean, Dick Butkus was another guy.
Yeah.
In a day and age where you could hit people however you wanted to,
but yeah, I mean, and Junior Seau, rest in peace to him and all that.
Yeah,
but,
I mean,
I mean,
obviously
he was an incredible player as well.
Yeah, and same energy. I mean, I think Ray Lewis has him a little bit higher up on that one, but I mean, just embodying the soul of your community and being able to show them, like, this is much more than football. This is life. This is, you know, this is everything to me. This is everything, you know, and I want this to be everything to you. A really exciting player to watch. I mean, I applaud the player for being in the situation that he was and coming back from all the scrutiny, things that he did or possibly didn't do. But ultimately, he's a player you knew was going to be a first ballot.
Yeah, definitely. I always thought that John Lynch deserves to get in. I mean, I feel like he's been snubbed a few times.
Yeah.
Speaking of, old school Chargers, is Rodney Harrison in the Hall of Fame?
That's a fantastic question.
I don't think he is. And if he's not, I think he deserves it as well.
Yeah, I mean, and he's another Super Bowl winning player, obviously, with the New England Patriots, which is a real bummer.
Yeah.
But there was John Lynch is one of the best safeties of all time, in my opinion. I mean, very similar player to Eric Weddle. Just plays the game well, tackles well, fundamentals. He's never in the wrong place.
Well, plus, John Lynch, he was almost like an outside linebacker, too.
He would bring that safety position down on the field.
The lateral, covering tight ends, everything. I think there's a lot of guys that deserve to be in the Hall of Fame that haven't even been mentioned. Do you have anybody that you can think of off the top of your head that you think has been snubbed?
Yeah, another one that I feel like there's a couple people, Isaac Bruce and Ty Law. Isaac Bruce was the receiver for the St. Louis Rams, when they won the Super Bowl back in 2000. I mean, Kurt Warner doesn't have the career he has without Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce.
Yeah, that's very
true. And Isaac Bruce was the number one guy there. And Ty Law, I mean, he was the definition of a shutdown corner in his day and age. So that just goes to question, when Revis decides to, or I believe he did retire this year,
but
it's like, if that guy's a first-round Hall of Famer, why isn't Ty Law?
Exactly, yeah.
It just goes to show which positions are valued more from the Hall of Fame standpoint.
Definitely, and you look at, offensive linemen, they take forever to get in.
Yeah,
who's
the guy that's
years,
been on that list for a while?
Years later.
Steve Hutchinson.
Look at all the Hall of Famers are quarterbacks, middle linebackers, wide receivers.
Yeah, it's the sexy positions.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's rough because there's guys out there that are totally deserving of it, whether it be Pro Bowl appearances or statistically. Steve Hutchinson is a guy that, I mean, he was one of the best offensive linemen in his time period. And like I said, with Ty Law, I mean, say what you want about Deion Sanders, but Deion Sanders was an athlete. Ty Law was a shutdown corner.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have space for Deion, you better make space for that guy.
Yeah, definitely. Let's transition over to some baseball. Earlier in the week, after the non-waiver trade deadline ended, teams are still able to make waiver claims on these guys, and the Padres lost Tyson Ross and Jordan Lyles. That was kind of big for me. I thought the Padres could have moved Tyson during that before that trade deadline for something, but obviously they couldn't make a deal with him.
I think that was a product of, not necessarily poor management, but trying to wait out your offers. I feel like there was more value for the player earlier in the year. And obviously not at a time where they thought they were going to give him up. Maybe they thought towards the trade deadline they could have gotten more. But he fell off pretty bad there in the, second quarter of the season. And, Jordan Lyles obviously not a huge staple in on our team. I think that the reason that I'm okay with it is because it allows them to bring in some of these younger guys now. You just saw Nick's being called up today.
Who had a great outing.
Yeah, and then who was the other guy yesterday? Padres pull up Trey Winter. I don't know if that's how you say it or not, but another young guy, young prospect that they could bring up and get some reps with. So I don't dislike not reclaiming those players. Some of these players you got to bring up before they end up in the Rule 5 draft, which if you don't call them up by a certain time,
they can get
snubbed or taken from you the next year. So I get it. And it's not like they were producing. So.
Exactly, yeah. And like you said, we do have a lot of young arms like Nix and Chris Paddock, Quantrill, Logan Allen.
Yeah, people that we
want to see. We want to see come up and start throwing for us. And, if Lamet returns, there's going to be a lot of guys pushing, fighting for a starting rotation spot. And I think it's excellent to be a Padres fan right now.
Oh, dude. We knew this year was a scratch. Yeah. And I really think, Project 2020, we keep saying that, and I keep saying that. I just hope some of these guys get called up next year. You know, I've been given Hedges the frickin' cold shoulder the entire year.
And he's been super hot lately.
And he's been awesome lately. Renfro's been on a frickin' tear. You know, he's got 2 grand slams this year, both super clutch. And then you look at Manuel Margot, his bat's been coming around as well. I mean, his glove's obviously always been there. You're starting to see some of these players develop. But I'm hoping that that propels them through this season on to next season so they can keep that same hot streak. And it'll definitely make for a competitive roster. I mean, there's no such thing as a bad competition. And having players that are good at a position, having multiple players that are good at a position is a great problem to have for an organization. And I think that's what you're going to start seeing with the Padres, having a loaded outfield, having a loaded, minor league pitching staff. There's a lot of options there, and it's going to keep guys, the real competitors out there, wanting a job.
Yeah, and competition just breeds winners. So, but like you said, yeah, the Padres have been hot. They had a 2-series road trip. They went 4-for-3 with the Cubs and the Brewers. But let me read you these numbers real quick. Renfro went 11-for-29 with 2 doubles, 4 home runs, 2 walks, 12 RBIs, and 4 runs scored. Reyes went 9-for-15 with a 4-game hit streak. Margot 10-for-25. Hedges.
Reyes had a couple home runs in there too.
Yeah, I think he hit 3. Yeah, Hedges 8-for-21. Spangenberg 7-for-19. Villanueva 9-for-21. 2 doubles, and he hit his 20th home run. I mean, he slowed down heavily since his huge start. Villanueva's coming back too. 4-29 over that little series. That's pretty good.
Yeah, they've been stroking. I mean, it's obviously a little too late, but it's nice to see some of these players' bats come around.
It's just nice to see them competing still.
Yeah, totally.
Really. Not throwing in the towel. Yeah. And kind of taking the season at what it is. Just seeing these guys still trying to prove that they have something in them.
I think
Renfro, he got the start through this whole, both of these road trips, and he showed that he can bat and he can produce when he's put on the field. So I think, I don't think that the moves of Ross and Lyles was too bad for the Padres. I definitely think that they showed some promise. And like you said, we have, Urias, Tatis coming up, all those pitchers, and it'll be interesting.
Yeah,
Project
definitely.
2020 is definitely something to look forward
Absolutely.
To.
Absolutely.
And as we come towards the end of baseball, I know AL, NL, MVP voting is coming in. Do you got any favorites coming up?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give you kind of my top two for AL and AL MVP and National League MVP. American League, I think, obviously Mike Trout's got to be in that conversation, if not the number one player there. Mookie Betts definitely deserves some consideration. I think it's hard to look at a player like J.D. Martinez just being a designated hitter, winning the MVP award. You're missing half of the game not being in the field. His numbers prove that he's a phenomenal player, but Mookie Betts is doing it with his bat and he's doing it with his glove. And I think he's giving Trout a run for his money. With the National League, I'm kind of going to go a different direction, though. I know Brandon talked about Freddie Freeman and not taking anything away from him at all. He's having a phenomenal year. But my number one right now is Javier Baez from the Cubs.
Okay, yeah, I see it.
He's been having a phenomenal year. I mean, he has been the best player on a loaded Cubs roster. I mean, obviously, Chris Bryant's been out with injury here and there, but, I mean, he's been far superior than Anthony Rizzo, Hayward, Wilson Contreras, the catcher on that team. I mean, he has been phenomenal. And then the other player that I look at, I mean, kind of another unsung hero here, is Matt Carpenter from the Cardinals. Obviously not a team that's been in contention most of the year, but another player that's having a phenomenal year. He batting .282 right now, 30 home runs, 33 doubles. I mean, the dude's doing it all for that team.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you with the NL with Javier Baez. I think, obviously Freddie Freeman has to get that look. And I think if Bryce Harper and the Nationals can kind of start winning some games, I think he's in talks too.
He's turned it around a lot. He was hitting .203 at the All-Star, and I think he's hitting like .240 now.
So if he can keep climbing that ladder, I mean, he'll definitely be in the conversation. Somebody else to think about, too. I mean, Max Scherzer with the Nationals, I mean, it's not often. I mean, we've seen it more often now than we have in the past. But, I mean, 272 ERA, 216 strikeouts with a 15-5 record. And that's on a Nationals team that's in third place in their division. So he's going out there and winning games for him. And if the Nationals make a playoff push here late in the season, I can seriously think he'll get some MVP candidate or some MVP votes.
Yeah, definitely some votes. And I think AL, you had it right with Mookie Betts. And I think Trout is obviously the clear favorite. And he's probably the most deserving of it. Just kind of seeing what kind of season he's having and what kind of career he's having. I know we were talking about earlier, at the end of his career, this guy could definitely be looked at as one of the greatest players to ever play the game.
Yeah,
I mean,
he does everything.
He is, but
I mean, he fields amazing. He steals bases like none other. I mean, he rakes at the plate, and not just for power. I mean, he obviously puts up power numbers, but I mean, the dude gets on base. His on base percentage is phenomenal.
I know the Padres definitely aren't gonna really get any votes, but yeah, but you have a Padres player that you think is gonna be would be your MVP, your Padres MVP.
I'll let you go first on this one.
It would be somebody a little bit different. I think I'd have to give it to Jankowski because I think that he's really been the only consistent batter and player the whole season. And, you know, he turned around our leadoff. I think I'd have to give it to Jankowski. Also, Lucchesi early in the season. Obviously, he's hurt a little bit, but it'd be probably one of those two guys. Who you got?
Lucchesi's definitely been stepping up huge for the Padres. Eric Hosmer, I mean, as much as I would love to give him some looks here, inconsistent for what we paid for him, not been the best player out there. And I think you look at an organization who's had, you know, players on and off the DL all year, it's hard to find one standout. But, you know, I think if we're looking at it right now, Carlos Villanueva, kind of like your selection, he's been hurt a little bit here and there. But, I mean, he beat out Headley, and Headley was off the roster. I mean, went out and hit 15 home runs in the first couple months of the season, cooled off a bit since then. But I think when you look at what you thought you were going to get out of a player versus what he's been, I'd give it to Carlos Villanueva.
Yeah, I could see Villanueva getting it as well. We talked a little golf earlier. Maybe we'll go golfing.
Oh,
tomorrow night. Tiger, Phil Mickelson, little HBO pay-per-view special or whatever it is.
I'm excited. I think it's freaking awesome.
I think it gets people excited about golf. I will say the timing of it's a little weird.
Yeah, there's questions about, you know, why that weekend. I guess if you look at the college football schedule, it falls on the same weekend that rivalry weekend is. I think, you know, with Thanksgiving being, you know, a week where everybody's off mostly, everybody's going to be sitting in front of the TV, you know, watching football, you know, switch over to the golf channel and watch these two old dudes out there try to outstroke each other.
Yeah. I don't really know what the...
It's a $10 million bet, essentially.
So $10 million, is it just one round, or are they playing like a three-round?
From what I understand, it's one round. I don't quote me on that because I could be wrong, and I don't think the details have been finalized yet. But it looks like, and they're still trying to figure out whether it's going to be stroke play. So, you know, if it's going to go like best of 18 or if they're going to go, you know, best overall score. I would like to see it stroke play. You know, I'd like to see them battle it out hole to hole. To see, you know, who ultimately ends up winning. But these are two guys, like, when you and I were both kids, that, you know, they were neck and neck for every big tournament, you know, at the top of the leaderboard.
And they really didn't like each other for a long time.
And I don't know if that wasn't, if they didn't like each other as much as, like, they respected each other as athletes and just were that competitive. Because both the dudes are so competitive.
$10 million for a game of golf is just...
And what I'm hoping is that $10 million is coming out of their pocket. You know,
definitely hope so. And
I mean, they'll definitely get some cut from the HBO, each of them. But I would love to see both these guys go to the bank, pull out the money, you know, make an ordeal out of it. Make this a big thing because...
Make it a real old school bet.
Yeah.
Make it like...
You know, show us everything. It's HBO, so, you know, it's all about the entertainment value. And, you know, if you watch these two dudes show up with their $10 million and be like, hey, this is what's on the table.
Here it is.
Let's go.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exciting. I mean, people have sat there and watched, you know, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire for years. And obviously, these guys are already millionaires, so it's not the same enthusiasm that you're going to see. But to watch two people go, hey, I want to prove that I'm the best, let's go show them.
I mean, I'd have to say Tiger over Phil.
Oh, I'd be rooting for Tiger over Phil, definitely. I feel bad because, you know, Phil's a local dude, you know, lives here in San Diego now. But Tiger's the man.
Tiger's the man. He's just a winner.
And say what you want about the guy, you know, what he does in his personal life, but the dude's turned it around, coming back from major back surgery. And, I mean, he's still got...
Getting hit with golf clubs by his wife.
You know, but he still has the most velocity off of his swing than any other player in golf. And that's to date. And he's out there 42 years old hitting the ball harder than anybody else.
For a month out from the PGA Tour Championship, I think Dustin Johnson is the leader currently.
And then Justin
Thompson is the leader with 7.5 million, and then Dustin Johnson is second with 7.2.
The FedEx score says Dustin Johnson and Justin Thomas, Justin Rose, Bubba Watson, Jason Day. Looks like they're all tied for number one.
I'm just going straight off
the PGA.
Purse. Yeah, straight off the purse, straight off their earnings. Dude, that's a crazy amount of money. Think about that. These guys have made $7 million in a year of just playing golf. That's unreal.
Oh, I mean, golf's an insane sport. I wish I would have got more into golf as a kid, because you can go out there and get last place in a tournament, still end up with a couple hundred grand in your pocket.
Yeah, I mean, Tiger's sitting all the way down there at 43rd with $2.2 million.
Not a bad gig.
Not bad at all.
I'm a huge Dustin Johnson fan.
Same here.
Currently in first place with the FedEx, like, season points. You know, obviously different tournaments have different earnings. Justin Thomas is a solid golfer as well. But I would love to see Dustin Johnson come up on top this year. I mean, maybe our listeners aren't huge golf fans, but if you ever watch this guy, I mean, he's got such a pretty swing. Puts the ball exactly where he wants to go with it. You know, a couple major tournament wins this year. Definitely deserving of that trophy.
Yeah, and I definitely feel like a super old man when I'm watching golf on a weekend. But, you know, that's...
No, it's fun to watch, though.
It is fun
to
watch.
There's some players out there that can make it interesting. I mean, we talked a little while ago about that Francisco Molinari guy going out there and not bogeying a single hole.
Yeah, that's... I mean... I would love to play around like that.
Right? I mean, the dude was... He played phenomenally. And that's huge in those FedEx standings. I mean, it's a pretty gnarly payout at the end of the year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it'll definitely be fun to watch down the stretch and see these guys compete. But definitely hope Dustin Johnson pulls it out.
Yeah, me too.
I'd like to see him win. Local news in San Diego, Little League World Series regional play was this week. Chula Vista Parkview lost to Rocklin. They played real well.
Yeah, huge bar, man. Chula Vista's, they've come out with some phenomenal Little League teams.
Oh, yeah. They've been in it for the past 5 years.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, bummer to see them not get it. I mean, congratulations to Rocklin, though. I mean, it's a huge honor. Those kids get to go out there and play against, you know, some of the best little kids in the world. And, I mean, what an experience to be able to go out there with players. I mean, go down the list. The one that I always remember, Sean Burroughs. Former third baseman of the Padres, who is a Little League World Series star. But it's a incredible honor for those kids to be able to go out to Williamsport and compete against, you know, teams like Japan and Korea. And say what you want about Little League versus youth baseball, but at that level where they get to the World Series and even these regional rounds, I mean, it's all about sportsmanship, and that's something that the game needs, is they need to teach these kids the value of what baseball is. And
exactly, I love seeing that. I always love seeing, you know, even when these guys strike out, they run back to the dugout.
Yeah,
you know, they don't care.
And I love how the coaches have the headsets on. You know, they go out there, and obviously they know they're being watched, so they're on their best behavior. But you go out there, and kids are watching this, and they see, you know, the coaches say, hey, you know, you gave it your best effort. You're gonna go out to center field now. Keep you in the lineup. This kid's going to come in and pitch now. And
well, not only for the kids, but for parents that are watching it too, saying, like, it doesn't need to be this serious. I don't need to be yelling at the coach saying, why is my kid not getting playing time and all this stuff? You know, they're doing their best, and they're trying to win.
It's not
too.
I mean, it's like, you know, baseball in its purest form. And I've always loved the Little League World Series. I mean, getting into our later 20s now, and I still find myself flipping through the channel, seeing the Little League World Series and turning it on for a bit. And, you know, baseball in its purest form, seeing these kids excited as they are, obviously you don't like to see the devastation as much, but that's life. And, you know, there can only be one champion, but for them to have that opportunity to go out there is awesome.
Definitely. And in other news, we had a local neighbor, Declan Lynch, went and played a tournament in Australia for San Diego, the 2018 World Boys Championship. I got to sit down with him a little bit earlier this today, before we started recording, to do a little interview. Let's listen in on that. Okay, I'm here with 15-year-old phenom Declan Lynch, who just got back from baseball tournament. 2018 World Boys Tournament in Australia. Yeah, just introduce yourself.
I'm Declan Lynch. I go to Mission Bay High School. I've been playing ball for about 11 years now. Play water polo on the sides. Played at Tech Lodi when I was younger, and now I play for Mission Bay High School. And this summer, I just got done playing for the 16U U.S. San Diego baseball.
So how did you become a part of that team? How did you try out? Was it your All-Star League? Or?
About 2 years ago. Yeah, 2 years ago when I was 13, going on 14. A coach of mine sent me an email, told me about the team. I was super excited because it's U.S. baseball, and they were going to Hawaii and Alameda to play. So I was super into it, and I wanted to go. I tried out last year. I didn't make it, and then I came back this year because I was still eligible for age-wise. And I tried out, and I made it, and then that's just how it happened.
Very nice. What position were you playing?
I played mostly left and right, and then every once in a while catcher.
Very nice. So overall experience of the tournament, how was it?
Super fun. I'm meeting new people from around the world and playing the sport, and then be able to try to talk to them, even though most of the time you couldn't, especially like Japan, talk too
the
well.
The language barrier.
It was still really fun trying to talk to them, and you had a Google Translator out, and switching jerseys and jackets at the end is always super cool.
Very nice. So who had the best jersey?
Best jersey, I would probably say Japan, because they were sponsored by Mizuno, so everything they had was Mizuno, and that's the actual national team, so they were the real thing.
Very nice. You guys finished third? You placed
we finished third, placed bronze. Korea placed first, Japan placed second.
It was in Australia. Was that your first time to Australia?
First time in Australia.
Did you get to travel around? You get to experience anything in there?
We were in Sydney, a little bit outside, place called Manly, and our tournament was in Blacktown. And we went to a lot of beaches. I went to Palm. Bondi was definitely one of the nicest. Sydney's super, super pretty. Very busy. Not San Diego, completely covered in dirt and homeless people. Sydney's really pretty. It's super clean. Buildings are ginormous. Opera House is super, super cool. And on top of the bridge, you could pay like $200 to walk it on top all the way across. And that would have been something I would have wanted to do. Just didn't have time, but Sydney's really cool, really pretty too.
All right. What was the most memorable experience of the entire trip?
Memorable experience, I'd say I went cliff jumping one day with a group of friends of mine on the team, and we were out there for about 3 hours that day just jumping off cliffs over and over again.
You know your mom's going to listen to this, and she's going to be like, I can't believe he was jumping off cliffs.
Oh, no, she knows. I told her about it. But, yeah, we were getting cut up by barnacles, and we're all flipping out because about the sharks. It was so much fun. And then my friend dropped the GoPro in the water, and I was the one that dove down and found it. It was like 15 feet down. It was just a super fun day.
What about on the field?
On the field, it was amazing. I think best day was Korea was pretty fun because we had a rain delay, so we were messing around with them on the field, having races and dance-offs in the rain delay. Playing Alameda was super fun. Had a really good game that day. Just a lot of fun days.
Very nice. And like you mentioned, you go to Mission Bay High School. You're playing for that team as well?
Correct.
Playing for varsity this year?
I was varsity as freshman, and then this upcoming season I should be varsity again. And that team I mostly catch, and this year hopefully he'll convert me to an outfielder.
Very nice. And you told me an interesting story off air about your number 17. You want to tell that one again?
So my coach is Dennis Pugh. He played at Mission Bay, coached at Mission Bay, got them 7 CIF championships, and then he left and went to San Marcos College to start up the program. And he came back this year, or 2 years ago, I'm sorry, and this was my first year, and out in center field, they retired his number over top the batter's eye. He's number 17, and beginning of last year during winter ball, he chose me to wear 17. That's how that kind of number started around, and now it's my number, and I wore it for U.S. baseball, and I plan on to keep wearing it.
Very nice. Big shoes to fill, though.
Yeah, I was pretty nerve-wracking. I think most of freshman year, I actually got in my head too much and thought too much at the plate and kind of struggled. But now that I'm coming back as a sophomore, I kind of feel like I earned it more. I feel a lot more comfortable already. I don't know. I think it's going to be a lot more fun because I'm not worrying about it so much.
Very nice. Very nice. And you said you were going into the 10th grade this year?
Yeah, I'm
going
to be a 10th grader.
All right. Yeah. I know it's still young and everything like that, but any colleges, any scouts?
No, not yet. I mean, the dream is LSU, but that's obviously the dream.
All right. Well, I know your coach seems like quite a role model, but you have anybody else in your life that's a role model or anybody?
By far, it'd be my uncle, Rocky Craig. He played professional ball with George Brett on the Rockies, and then his son played minors. And I don't know, just being as good as him is obviously the goal and making it that far, but he's definitely a role model.
And favorite player of all time?
Favorite player of all time. I think I'm going to go with Buster Posey on that one.
All right, you're done. No more on that. Buster Posey? Come on. Are you a Giants fan?
I don't know. I can't say I'm a Giants fan because I live in San Diego and I obviously like San Diego. But every once in a while, I'll go for the Giants.
All right.
But obviously, I'm a San Diego fan.
All right. I'll respect your opinion. It's all right. Thanks for coming on. That was fun.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, of course, man. And, of course, we got to keep looking out for Declan Lynch.
Thank you so much for having me.
Declan, that's just a great opportunity for him.
Absolutely. I didn't make it here in time for the interview, but I got to talk a little bit with him afterwards. And, you know, young kid, bright future. I mean, hopefully he can go put it down at Mission Bay and continue on with his wonderful career.
Yeah, and place third in the tournament. That's an amazing feat.
Yeah. I mean, to be given those opportunities at a young age is wonderful. And like we were saying with Williamsport, I mean, to be able to go to Australia and play with teams from, you know, I think you said Korea ended up winning the tournament.
Korea won, Japan was the second
place. But to go out there and compete with players from different countries and see how they play the game is phenomenal. And that's not opportunities that everybody gets. And if you can go out there and take a little bit of, you know, like take it as a learning experience and, you know, maybe take some of the things that they're doing, implement them into your own game, vice versa. It's a wonderful experience.
Exactly, yeah. And he's just a great kid overall. I mean,
man, dude, the kid grows every time I see him. First time I saw him, he was like 5'2", and now he's like towering, what, 6'3"?
Yeah.
He's a monster.
Giant, yeah, so.
He needs to get a haircut, but.
Yeah. But, yeah, as long as he keeps plugging away, we'll see how he does at Mission Bay.
And absolutely.
He has a good baseball
career. Yeah, maybe we'll have him on here again after the season's over, see how he did.
Definitely. But now let's get into our stat of the day.
Stat of the day, stat of the day, da-ba-doo-ba-doo, stat of the day, stat of the day. Here comes that what? Stat of the day. Bop!
Stat of the day, in 1963, Attorney General Robert Kennedy ordered Alcatraz closed. I've never actually been to Alcatraz.
I've seen it.
I've seen it. I've never been there.
Yeah.
I think Alcatraz is just a crazy idea overall. Just this island prison.
Dude,
I mean, in the middle of San Francisco's Bay. And I don't know. Whoever came up with that just watched one too many scary movies.
Dude, I mean, the whole thing is so frightening. Like, I don't have any interest in going there at all. I feel like it would be a little too morbid for me. But you'd think a place like Guantanamo Bay and stuff like that. And I mean, our prisons now look like a damn vacation compared to some of these places.
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that you hear all those stories of those guys trying to escape and then they freeze or they die in, you know,
in the water.
Bay,
there's a ton of sharks out there too.
Yeah,
I wonder. Who knows how many bodies are underneath there, man?
Oh yeah,
it's insane. No, I have no interest in going out there. You know, good for him for shutting it down because that's some scary stuff. It's a museum now, right?
Yeah, they opened it up as a museum, so you can go through it. Yeah, but.
They had a whole, like, night long in Alcatraz thing where you can spend. No thanks.
It didn't last very long. It opened in 1934, and then it closed in 1963. So,
short-lived.
I think people were more or less thinking that it was just a crazy idea.
Yeah, right.
It's kind of
here. Let's go take these crazy prisoners and throw them off on an island. It's very Batman-ish.
It almost kind of reminds me of what's that scary movie? Shutter Island.
Oh, gosh.
Totally like Shutter Island out there.
Yeah.
Just a loony bin.
Yeah, no. Shaylee's still never seen that movie.
She needs to.
Yeah.
I don't think Sarah's seen it. Sarah hasn't seen any movie.
It was funny because she hates scary movies and she, you know, was like, oh, that looks good. And I was like, dude, you will freak out.
You have no idea.
That is like a mind-fucking movie.
When I saw that movie, I didn't really know what I was going into.
Yeah.
And then I saw it and it's. Yeah.
It's not one of those that, like, is deliberately scary, but it makes you think, and you're like,
yeah,
that's a creepy one.
It's like, is he crazy?
Or yeah.
Was he not crazy? What is really going on?
Yeah, it was one of those. That and Inception, those were the two, like, they made you think too much.
Yeah. Well, same with, like, I mean, The Matrix back in the
day.
It made you think.
Too much mind stuff going on, but yeah. Shutter Island was a creepy movie.
Shutter Island was definitely creepy.
Definitely reminded me of Alcatraz.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I got a little lazy with the stat of the day.
That's just all good. I appreciate it.
But, all right. Again, just two amigos today.
Two amigos in the podcast. Amigo. But we are three amigos in the podcast.
And you could follow us on Twitter at the number 3 amigos_andapod. We're on Podomatic, iTunes, and Podcast Addict at Three Amigos and a Podcast. Kind of have a website going now.
Awesome.
A little bit through WordPress.
Thank you, Amigos. Dean. He's out there doing all of this stuff, even though he's got a full-time job.
Yeah, it's
killing it for the pod.
I know. Maybe we'll get an intern in here or something.
See if we can get Declan back. Yeah.
Maybe Declan wanted to do it. Website, threeamigosandapodcast.wordpress.com, and you can always email us, threeamigosandapodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah. If you have anything you guys want to add to our conversations, any comments, questions, concerns, whatever it may be, just want to give us your opinion on something, we'd love to have it. So reach out, please.
Oh, definitely. And dude, I am burning up. It's too hot.
Yeah. No, it needs to cool down.
We need to get
leaving
this.
Work at 9:30 and it's still being 80 degrees.
Yeah.
And sticky. It's disgusting.
All right, guys. Two amigos signing off. Our third amigo's gone. But we will see you next week.
See you next week.
Bye.